argument, and then they meet with a justice at the end of the second oral argument and discuss the procedures the court uses to hear, to select, hear, and decide cases. We do not discuss with the people at lunchtime the substantive issues of the case. And everyone is welcome to join the students at noon. So let me introduce the court to you all. Starting on my far left is Justice Michael Gableman. Seated next to him is Justice Patience Robinsack. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice Anne Walsh Bradley. And to her right, Justice David Prosser. And on the far right, Justice Annette Ziegler. With those introductions made, I will now call our next case and our final case for today, 07AP45, Nellie Dillard Trinidad versus Capital Indemnity Corporation. And representing Nellie Dillard Trinidad is Robert D. Crivello. Mr. Crivello.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Attorney Robert Crivello with the law firm of Cannon and Dunfee. We represent the plaintiffs in this matter, namely the families of Elizabeth Chaos de la Trinidad and Marisol Aguilar Torres, who drowned on Defendant Coulter Wildlife's property in July in 2002. This is a case about corporate organization and corporate conduct. Corporations are fictitious persons under the law. The only way domestic corporations come to life in Wisconsin and are allowed to conduct business is by operation of statutes enacted by the Wisconsin legislature. Here, the issue before this court is whether Halter Wildlife Incorporated, a stock corporation, was not organized or conducted for pecuniary profit pursuant to Section 895.521C of the Wisconsin statutes during the year in which the plaintiffs drowned on Halter's property. If Halter does not meet this definition of a nonprofit organization, then all parties agree that the defendants are not entitled to immunity for the drowning deaths of the plaintiffs, and the Court of Appeals decision should be reversed. This court addressed the exact same statutory definition of a nonprofit organization within the context of a tax issue in St. John's Military Academy versus Larson County Treasurer. There, the court noted that the income tax exemption statute at issue only applied to corporations that are not organized or conducted for pecuniary profit. Importantly, the court interpreted the statute as follows. If any corporation of the kinds named in the statute is organized as a pecuniary profit-sharing institution, or if not so organized, but is being conducted for pecuniary profit, then its income is subject to taxation. Therefore, it's an either-or proposition. If Halter is organized for pecuniary profit, it is not entitled to immunity as a nonprofit organization, despite its conduct. If it's conducted for pecuniary profit, it is not entitled to immunity as a nonprofit, despite its organization.
Counsel, I'm concerned about the negative disjunctive here and the interpretation. I'm concerned about a lot of things in life, and one of the things is a negative disjunctive, quite honestly. And its interpretation here in the statute, and that's right what you're on right now. St. John Military, under that case, do you believe that they interpreted this language to mean in the context of a tax case that you needed both rather than just one? When I say both, I mean organized and conducted?
That is how this court interpreted the exact same definition in the St. John's case. It said, if you're organized for pecuniary profit, but if you are organized for pecuniary profit, you don't meet the definition despite what your conduct is. And if you conduct yourself for pecuniary profit, despite how your organization is set up, then you don't meet the definition promulgated by the Wisconsin legislature. So this court has already determined back in 1919 that it is an either-or proposition.
Well, that's what piqued my interest. Again, it's how you frame it. One way of framing it is, in order to qualify for tax exemption under St. John's with that kind of phraseology, you needed both, right?
Correct.
And if you had one but didn't have the other, you weren't entitled to tax exemption.
That's correct, Your Honor. And to take the latter part of the definition, conducted for pecuniary profit, St. John's discusses some facts that are relevant to this case as well. In 1984, when Halter Wildlife Incorporated came into existence under Chapter 180 of the Wisconsin statute, 200 of Halter's exclusive original members received common stock in the corporation. What does that mean? They have voting rights. They have equity ownership in the corporation. They have the right to receive dividends under Chapter 180, specifically 180.0640 under the current formation of the statute.
Counsel, have there been any distribution of dividends?
There has not, but what the court said in St. John's is that when you have stockholders, and in this case exclusive members of this corporation, when the corporation excess revenues exceeds its expenses, the members of the corporation have in fact received a profit because the value of their stock has increased.
Right. So the record is clear. Apparently there have not been any distribution of actual dividends on the stock.
A direct cash payment to the members of Halter Corporation, there has not.
All right. And then have there been any besides the, and I won't get in the way, you were about to make the argument that because the revenue is coming in, that they're getting a reduction in their rates, and so therefore that may qualify as a dividend under some definition. I think that's where you're headed.
That is actually a separate argument. That is these swimming picnic activities.
And I promise you can get there, but I just have a couple more questions. Have there been any, does the record include any history of any kind of cash payouts, distributions, or anything else?
An actual cash payout to the members of Halter Wildlife, no.
All right. And also, I did not see any kind of buy-sell agreement here. Is there a buy-sell agreement?
What do you mean by a buy-sell agreement, Your Honor?
If any of the stockholders wish to divest themselves of the stock, what is the plan?
I believe that under the Articles of Incorporation, they can trade the stock back in if they wish to, but I don't believe there is a specific buy-sell statement within the Articles of Incorporation itself.
And if they wish to turn the stock back in, then what price do they get for their shares?
Well, I don't know what would happen under that scenario. And then if I could retract, I'm not sure that they have the right to trade their stock back in. What I do know is that there are 200 exclusive members of Halter Wildlife that do have stock in this corporation. Common stock, just like everybody else in the corporation has. I guess, hypothetically speaking, could one of the stockholders go to the corporation and say, I wish to sell my share of stock, especially given the amount of equity in this corporation? Yes, I think technically under the law they could do that.
Well, I think that would be my second question, which would be if they can, then are they going to get a share of inflated equity, or a value that is commensurate with how the value of the land or the holdings has gone up? But we don't know that. The record isn't clear here. No,
we don't know how that situation would be handled. It could. They could get inflated equity. Technically, they would be allowed to say.
And your opposing counsel would probably say, and they could not. It all depends. We don't know.
Right. All right. Cordillo, isn't it significant that the Internal Revenue Service treats this organization as a not-for-profit organization, and that the Department of Financial Institutions here in Wisconsin also in a letter says basically the same thing? Aren't those significant to our determination here?
Well, no, Your Honor. And first of all, with regard to the Department of Financial Institutions, we would dispute that the state of Wisconsin recognizes this corporation as a nonprofit organization. I think the evidence of that is in one of the letters that the defendant submitted in this case, where it came to the attention of Falta Wildlife that it had been listed as a for-profit organization on the Department of Financial Institutions database. And when they inquired about that, the Department of Financial Institutions said, we gave you the 01 for-profit database designation because you're organized under Chapter 180. That's the only database code that we could have given you, because there is no such thing as a nonprofit stock corporation under the state of Wisconsin. So I think inherently, at least when this corporation was formed, and they were given a code as to the type of corporation that they are considered to be under Wisconsin law, the Secretary of State at that time said, you're for-profit because you're organized under Chapter 180.
Does the letter go further and indicate that they're going to have a notation in regard to this corporation? And it seems to indicate that they recognize that it's a not-for-profit corporation or organization. Isn't that correct?
It's one employee at the Department of Financial Institutions that wrote a letter in response to Halter Wildlife's request. When Halter Wildlife basically went to this one employee at the Department of Financial Institutions and said, could you write us a letter saying that it's okay for us to be a stock nonprofit corporation in the state of Wisconsin? But that one employee doesn't usurp this court's authority to take a look at the statutes under Chapter 180 and 181 and make a determination that there isn't any Wisconsin law that says that you can be a nonprofit stock corporation under the statutes. And in fact, the other thing that shows that the Department of Financial Institutions recognizes Halter as a for-profit stock corporation is a fact that Halter uses to try to obtain immunity in this case, and this is the fact that they got a certificate of incorporation from the Secretary of State back in 1984.
Let's jump for a minute to the second part of the question I asked you. My understanding is the Internal Revenue Service treats this organization as a not-for-profit corporation under 501c7. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, but it is our contention, Your Honor, that is not persuasive authority insofar as determining when a corporation is organized or conducted for pecuniary profit under Wisconsin law, and especially the recreational immunity statute, and here's why. The goal of the recreational immunity statute, and nobody disputes this, is to have owners open up their lands to the public. Under the IRS tax exemption that Halter enjoys for tax-exempt status under the federal code, they get tax-exempt status based on their exclusivity. And particularly under the regulations, and it's 1.501c7, subsection B, a club which engages in business, such as making its social and recreational facilities available to the general public, or by selling real estate, timber, or other products, is not organized and operated exclusively for pleasure, recreation, and other non-profitable purposes, which is the whole reason why they get tax-exempt status. So if this court is going to give persuasive authority to the fact that Halter Wildlife receives tax-exempt status, this court will be defining a nonprofit organization as one that cannot open its members to the public based on the IRS code, despite the fact that the goal of recreational immunity is for landowners to open up their land to the public.
If we're to look at the definition of 895.52, and I get what you're saying about Chapter 180, 181, why corporations organize under one versus another, and you want that definition to drive the outcome here, right? But if you look at the definition of under 895.52.1c, nonprofit organization, why didn't the legislature just say a Chapter 181 corporation, if that's really what they meant?
The legislature could have said that. But the fact that they didn't say that doesn't mean that the definition under 895.52 of a nonprofit organization is somehow different from how a nonprofit organization is defined under Chapter 180 or 181. Bearing in mind that Chapter 180 and 181 is how these corporations come to life in the first place, there is no Alfalfa Wildlife without Chapter 180 and 181. And I think it's pretty much undisputed that Halter is a for-profit corporation under the very statute that allowed it to come to life.
Do you then think organization or association really means corporation?
I believe it's synonymous. And I think, Your Honor, what is even more important is the fact that when we have statutes based on that have similar subject matter, the rule of statutory construction is that we try to interpret those statutes to have a similar meaning. I believe the Latin phrase is in pari materia, whereby the law tries to avoid a situation whereby Halter Wildlife is defined as a for-profit organization under some of the Wisconsin statutes, yet is defined as a non-profit organization under other Wisconsin statutes, because they all deal with the same subject matter. And in this case, looking at the very definition of what the Wisconsin legislature decided to use for the recreational immunity statute, we know that Halter doesn't meet the definition based on the St. John's case. The record reflects that in 2002, the year in which the plaintiffs drowned, Halter turned a profit of $107,000.
Before you get to that argument, I want to stay with the statutory definition and follow up on Justice Siegler's question. I have, however, a threshold question that I meant to ask earlier, and I need help with this. In looking at the Articles of Incorporation, I have before me, it's in your appendix, restated Articles of Incorporation of June 1984. And I also have before me restated Articles of Incorporation of May 8, 84, Wisconsin Secretary of State, filed then. When I read the restated Articles of Incorporation that were filed apparently on June 19, 1984, or at least arguably on that date, that reads very differently than the May restated articles. For instance, the June have nothing in the articles about being a nonprofit corporation formed for educational, benevolent, fraternal, etc. It has nothing in it about shall not be permitted to carry on certain activities. It reads to me like a straight 180 article of incorporation. Stock, pretty brief, says that it shall supersede and take the place of the existing Articles of Incorporation and amendments. Which restated Articles of Incorporation controls in this case?
I would believe it's the most current one, Your Honor. And
well, if it's the most current one, I don't think the briefs are tracking the most current one. They're tracking, it seems to me, more the May one.
What I saw in both articles of incorporation, and as being significant to this case, is the fact that this corporation was adopted pursuant to the authority and provisions of Chapter 180, that there were members that were issued shares of common stock, that either articles do not prohibit distributions to shareholders. In other words, I believe it's called a poison pill. There's no poison pill in the articles of incorporation that would prevent that type of distribution. And I believe both articles state that the articles permit Halter to engage in any lawful activities authorized by Chapter 180 of the Wisconsin statutes. And that's significant because Chapter 180 of the Wisconsin statutes allows this corporation to make distributions to its shareholders. Whether or not they have actually done it, that's the conducted for pecuniary profit portion of the nonprofit organization definition. But if we're just looking at whether or not they're organized for pecuniary profit, absolutely.
So your answer to my question is, which one controls?
It would be the latter one.
Okay. I have a question for you. If this same corporation, organized under Chapter 180, formed two associations, one association was a group of people organized to run this hunting club on a nonprofit basis, and they ran it on a nonprofit basis. And the corporation organized another association of people, and they ran a farmer's market, and they ran it to make money, and they did make money. Would the first association qualify for immunity under 895.52?
Is the first, well, I would need a clarification, Your Honor, on your question. Is the first association organized with stock?
No, just an association of people. It's not organized under any corporate status. It's just an association of people.
I'm sorry, and I apologize for the clarification. Like a partnership, a sole proprietorship, an LLC?
It's not organized as any particular, it's just a group of people that got together and they want to run this on a non-profit basis, and that's what they did, and they are people that were gathered together by this corporation. The people that own the corporation gathered these other guys together to run this, and then they gathered another group of folks together to run a farmer's market. But the farmer's market was for profit, this was not.
I think I understand your question. The association, the group of people that is organized not-for-profit would be a private property owner under the recreational immunity statute.
Mm-hmm.
That is subsection 1E.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they would be entitled to immunity is whether or not they would have generated...
No, what if they didn't own this property? Corporation still owns the property.
Okay.
But there's an association that was organized to run it to run the hunting club on the property. Okay. Separate association was organized to do something else, to a farmer's market was my example, but it was for profit. And I guess what I'm trying to get you to focus on, does it matter whether the folks that are running this are a corporation, just a group of folks loosely gathered together in an association, a partnership as you suggest, or whatever?
I believe under the recreational immunity statute, you have to define who the owner is.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, once you define who the owner is, do the owner has, and if I'm understanding your question correctly, certain
mm-hmm.
people that they contract business out to.
Mm-hmm.
So in your situation, if Halter Wildlife contracted with an association mm-hmm. to run its organization, would it be entitled to recreational immunity if it's furthering the not-for-profit purpose? I would say no, because it's still tied to the corporation, which is organized for stock and is organized for pecuniary profit. Despite the fact that they divided up into these two associations, you have two separate elements under the statute, and the owner or the company that's contracting this work out to this association is still organized for pecuniary profit, and that association would be tied to the ultimate corporation.
Okay, so you say both the owner and the association must be organized for nonprofit in your response to me, correct?
I believe the owner has to be organized as a nonprofit, which Halter is not in this case.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, I'd like to follow.
The statute on immunity governs the owner, right?
Yes.
So you have to look at the owner.
Correct.
Is that your response?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'd like to follow up on a question that Justice Crooks posed a little while ago. I'm looking at the letter dated February 16, 2005 from the State of Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions. It says in part, this entity has, since its inception, been a stock not-for-profit corporation. Unfortunately, when our database was created, we did not set forth a specific status code for stock not-for-profit entities. Why does this letter, in your opinion, not reflect the official position of the Department of Financial Institutions?
I believe what that letter shows, Your Honor, is that the reason the Department of Financial Institutions didn't have a code for stock nonprofit corporations is because there is no such thing under Wisconsin law. As of July 1st, 1953, it was unlawful to organize as a stock nonprofit corporation because the legislature decided that We want our nonprofit corporations to not organize with stock because of the ability to make distributions to shareholders. So what that letter is saying is the reason we don't have a designation for nonprofit stock corporations in the state of Wisconsin is because there is no such thing. Despite what that employee says, and I think it's very important, Your Honor, that despite what this employee says in the letter, that he believes you can have a stock nonprofit corporation, that doesn't usurp this court from taking a look at the statutes and making a determination as to whether or not you can legally organize like that.
So you're clear. I didn't think for a moment that the Department of Financial Institutions could usurp this court. But my question was, you seem to indicate, and now I more fully understand your response. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, are there nonprofit organizations organized under Chapter 180?
No. I cannot think of a single instance where we've come across a nonprofit corporation organized under Chapter 180 after July 1st, 1953 that has stock. The only corporation that can be organized under Chapter 180 is a corporation that was grandfathered in prior to July 1st, 1953. That's when the Wisconsin legislature made the determination that if you want to organize as a nonprofit organization in the state of Wisconsin, you can't have stock. And again, the reason being is because stockholders have the right to receive distributions from the corporation. And I believe that's the point that I was trying to make when I was following up on Justice Bradley's questions about the articles of incorporation.
But are you acknowledging that there are nonprofit organizations organized under Chapter 180?
Other than Halter, the only corporations that can legally, and I see my time is up.
You may answer the question.
Under the statutes, the only corporation that can organize under Chapter 180 as a stock corporation are the ones that were grandfathered in prior to July 1st, 1953, when the Wisconsin legislature made the determination that from here on out, if you want to be a nonprofit corporation, under Wisconsin law, you have to organize on a non-stock basis. So,
but there are such nonprofit organizations.
Only if there are still organizations that are still grandfathered in prior to July 1st, 1953. And those corporations would also have the opportunity to elect to become a non-stock nonprofit corporation under Chapter 181.
Well, there's a nonprofit organization that you may be familiar with, the Green Bay Packers, organized under Chapter 180.
Yes, and the Green Bay Packers were organized prior to July 1st, 1953, and are grandfathered in as a permissible stock nonprofit organization.
There might be even a member of this bench with stock in that. I'm not certain. I would suspect, however, there have been no dividends paid.
That's true, but if I can answer your question.
Were the Green Bay Packers organized, you know?
I don't.
When pride still mattered.
That's
right. In the 1920s.
And if they have been organized after 1953, they will be a for-profit corporation under Wisconsin law. I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Attorney Wendy G. Gunderson, representing Capital Indemnity Corporation et al. Gunderson.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Wendy Gunderson. I'm with the Brookfield Law Firm of Smith, Gunderson, and Rowan. I represent Capital Indemnity Corporation, Halter Wildlife, and Rachel Proko in this action. I think we should start out with what the issue is. We spent a lot of time in the briefs and a lot of time here today talking about what's legally organized under one chapter or another, but that's not the issue that's really before this court. What's before this court is the definition under 895.52 and what's a nonprofit organization. I suspect that if there's any corporate lawyers in the room right now or watching via the internet, they would cringe at the thought of two personal injury lawyers coming to speak today about what the scope of the corporate statutes were back in 1953.
Let's take your focus. You say the issue before the court is not how they were organized, did I hear you say that, but the definition under 895.52, right? Wrong.
was that
right? Let's take a look at 95-52.
Yes.
And it's my belief, correct me, or inform me, that the definition itself, 895-52C, in essence, would tie you back into the statutory organization. Kind of circuitous. I'll tell you what, and correct. Let's take a look at C. Nonprofit organization means an organization or association not organized or conducted for pecuniary profit.
Correct.
What's the organizational structure? How can you organize in this state a nonprofit organization or association? What alternatives do you have? I've got a study group, six couples, and we decide on Sunday night to go and do some good. Is that a nonprofit corporation organized in this state?
How many people do you have?
Six couples.
Okay. I believe you can be a nonprofit association under Chapter 184.
That's right. So that's exactly it. In fact, I've been doing a little extra reading. Here we go, the guide for Wisconsin nonprofit organizations. How can a nonprofit organization be organized in the state of Wisconsin?
It depends on what statute you're asking me to answer the question.
What are the ways? There are only a limited number of ways.
The reason I made that proviso is because 895.52 is not like other statutes which define nonprofit organization in terms of organization under a particular corporate statute. At pages 13 through 14 of my brief, you'll see I outlined
that.
A whole set.
That's not my question. My question is, how can you be organized? Before I started reading this stuff, I would have answered the question this way. The only way you can be a nonprofit organization in the state, I would have answered, is under 181, that is a non-stock, or a trust. And lots of times I found, there'll be a trust that's set up, and that's one of the two, and it still is, one of the two most popular vehicles for nonprofit corpus, used more than a trust. But those are the two general vehicles used to organize a nonprofit. You can't be a nonprofit unless you are some kind of corporation. Let me be vague here. I'm not saying 180 or 181. Some kind of corporation. A trust seems to me you can be a cooperative. You can be a, an unincorporated association. Doesn't happen very much, but you can do that. Unincorporated association, non-stock corporation, trust, and sometimes a cooperative. Those are the ways that you can become, in this state, as I understand it, a nonprofit organization. Do you know of any other way that you can become a nonprofit organization in this state?
Under the corporate statutes?
No. Not necessarily under the corporate statute. Mm-hmm. The trust statute's under the corporate
right.
statutes. The cooperative statute, that's 185, I guess. How can you become how can you be organized as a nonprofit in this state other than the four ways that I've just indicated?
I don't think that 895.52 requires a formal organization. As to formal organization, I believe you're correct, that those are the method or modes under the current statutes to organize a nonprofit.
So that's a point of obviously disagreement here. Your position is that C under 895-52, you don't need to be organized formally. You can be, and those would be, I think, at least to my knowledge, the only four ways you can be organized as a nonprofit in this state. There might be more, but it's a bit esoteric, I think. Let's get back to Justice Rosenczak's hypothetical. A group of people coming together to do good, and God knows you're not going to make any money on it. that's a nonprofit organization?
I believe it would be.
Okay, and how are they going to, this is for owners of property, right?
Right.
So how is this good group of people coming together just to do good and not make money? How are they going to be owners of property? Don't you have to be an entity? Don't you have to have some identity under the state? How can you be organized for owners of property as a nonprofit organization in this state?
I believe you can have joint owners of property without having another entity. If you're just talking about simply ownership of property, mm-hmm. and actually the
nonprofit ownership of property.
Right. You can have the ownership of property by people in common without having some type of corporate structure. And that would be a nonprofit organization. You're talking like a joint tenancy, you think, is a nonprofit organization in this state that can hold property? I believe in terms of the way this statute's phrased, it doesn't require that formal organization. Now,
need a mission statement, a statement of purpose.
And then you probably fall into Chapter 184 of nonprofit associations, because the governing law on that is actually rather, if it can say loose, as opposed to the corporate statutes, and they're entitled to IRS tax exemption as well.
And a lot of nonprofit associations are really incorporated under 181, though.
Well, see,
hey, Wisconsin Professional Police Association. That's an association that we may have some familiarity with during the course of our tenure. That's a 181. Well, assume it's a 181. So just because it's an association doesn't mean that it's not a 181.
It may be a 181, it may be a 184, it may be some other type of structure. I'm not familiar enough with the organization to speak as to what their structure
Before
is.
I finish, let me get back to what really should have been my threshold question, and
okay.
I apologize. And that is, what are we looking at here? I mean, this entity, whatever it is, at least has been presented to us as a corporation. The arguments are whether or not it's a 180 or a 181, or someplace in between. What articles of incorporation are we dealing with here?
There are, there's an original articles, and then there's, I believe, two, if not three, restated. I understand your point. The June 19th, there's actually June 14th as well, and that's why I believe there's four of them, indicates other provisions. And my understanding is that the last restated articles of incorporation are made a part thereof as other provisions. And that's why all the parties to this point in time have been talking about those stated articles of incorporation indicating the stated purpose of Halton Wildlife.
Yeah, and I just don't know how you get there. And I need your help, because on its face and in the statute that was in existence at the time, it states that the restated articles of incorporation supersede and take the place of existing articles of incorporation and amendments thereto.
Right, and there's an Article 10, I believe. I can pull it up, but it states other provisions, and my understanding was that the restated articles, which we've been talking about 2 years now, or 4 years now on this case, were part of those other provisions. And that's why you see in the record you'll find an affidavit from John Burke, who's the general manager from Halton mm-hmm. Wildlife, who indicates that this was the organization for this purpose of Halter Wildlife. It's in the record in terms of...
I have at your appendix 104.
Yes.
You got to help me, because it's not obvious
you
to me.
You can see it on page 104, Article 10. And
yeah.
It says other provisions.
Yeah, nothing is there.
Right. My understanding is that the articles of incorporation that we've been talking about all along were appended as part of those other provisions. Although it probably would have been clearer had they said, see attached or something to that effect.
Well, what do we have?
Is that the record?
Well, the only thing is the volume 1164, page 185, and then incorporators. But then it's got restated
articles, but it doesn't look to me as if they were recorded.
I don't believe this is the first time this has been raised, and so there's not a specific affidavit saying this was appended to it.
Well,
there's an affidavit from John Burke, the general manager of Hope for Wildlife, indicating that this was organized for this purpose.
Yeah, well, you know, I need records, which causes me to question, isn't there another later subsequent restatement of the articles that we don't have in this record?
My understanding is that's complete. There is an affidavit in the record. It's either mine or Mr. Burke's. I think it's mine, which says that these were the articles of incorporation in total for Halt to Wildlife.
Well, I don't know the answer to this. I just don't. But I see in the Department of Financial Institutions restated articles dated June 14, 1988. Now, maybe there's a typo. I don't know anything about it. I'm just saying, since there was reference in the briefs about how the Department of Financial Institutions held this halter out to be what it was or wasn't and how it listed it, I went and looked, and then I see new restatement in 1988. I'm not saying their entry is right. I have no idea. But it just causes me great confusion when I think that you've got language on its face that says it supersedes and takes the place, and language in the statutory scheme of 83 and 84 that says the same thing, and I'm not sure what we're dealing with. So you really got to convince me that, tell me what we are dealing with here.
Justice Bradley, I maybe can help you all. The same document number appears on the attachment as appears at the beginning of the recording of the document in volume 1164, page 183. And then if you go further to the old bylaws, it has the same document number on the side of the page. So I assume it's attached as part of the same document. But
thank you, Justice. I appreciate that.
What about the more recent restatements?
Just as far as I know, that was the complete set. I don't know if there was a typographical error on the entry date or not, but that is what was in the record as a complete set of the Articles of Incorporation.
In the record from what? From the Department of Financial Institutions?
No. It came from my client in response to discovery requests,
okay.
I believe, and it might have even been attached to Attorney Covello's or Attorney Dunphy's affidavit in the record. But they were produced in discovery as a complete set of the articles. So I don't know if it's a typographical error on the department's part or not. I can't say.
I just don't. Maybe it's beating a dead horse. But we got Douglas the Follett's office that says the attached is a duplicate. What exactly was attached?
I'm sorry, I don't know. What page of the appendix are you
looking at? Your appendix at 102. It says the undersigned Secretary of State certifies the attached as a duplicate of a document accepted and filed. Exactly what is attached?
I believe the order in the appendix is the same as the order.
What was
that they came to me, so I'm just paging through just to see if I can find out where it ends. From what I can tell, it appears to go through A111.
See, my concern is, and I appreciate the volume 1164, page 184, that Justice Rogensack referenced, but that only encompasses, if I may, on your appendix, 103, 104, volume 1164, page 185, is then on appendix 105, and I assume that's 106, but I have no idea, there's no stamp, no volume 1164, page 184 on the May We can check the Register of Deeds, can't we?
I would suspect, yes.
And if this wasn't in the Register of Deeds with everything on it, then that's not what we're talking about, is that it? Now, the Court of Appeals thought we were talking about all of this extra stuff, other provisions, right?
Incorporated in the Court of Appeals decision were provisions from those stated articles as to the purpose of Health and Wildlife.
Right. And there's no reference in the restated articles of incorporation that deal with the purpose of the corporation. There's no reference that these are extras under Article 10, is there?
That these are that, there is nothing on that second page under Article 10 which says see attached. But my understanding is from the file stamps and from what has been represented and is in the record as produced in discovery that these were the articles of incorporation.
Now, I have a question about the Secretary of government entity on finances. That's a question that was asked of him. He didn't have a hearing. He didn't hear the other side. He just answered a blank question, not knowing that it affected liability.
My understanding is that, actually, it's in the affidavit of John Burke, mm-hmm. that an inquiry was made by Halter Wildlife as to the status, and that was a letter they received in response.
After the lawsuit was filed.
After the lawsuit was filed. And the reason was, is they went on the, there's that CRIS site, which you can look up a corporate status and indicated they were a for-profit corporation, and they knew that was not right, and that's
also,
why they were being...
Also, we've already established, it appears to me, there were no distribution of dividends. Fair enough?
There's absolutely no evidence of dividends.
Evidence of any kind of distribution of any kind?
None. The best argument we've got from the other side is that in prior years or in some years they had lowered membership dues, and that constituted pecuniary value to the shareholders.
What were the membership dues in most recent years about?
At the time Mr. Burke was deposed in 2006, I believe, they were $2,200 a year. They were $1,800 a year back in 2002. In fact, I went through the financial statements to figure out if there was actually a decrease in the membership dues. Turns out there wasn't. It looks like we had an average of 275 members. We may have lost a member or gained a member, but the numbers, as you can expect, only go up.
From what period of time are you talking about?
The financial statements are the year 2000 through the year 2004, and then we know of the membership rate in 2006.
Was there a buy-sell agreement?
No.
What was the plan for in case a member, or I should say a stockholder, needed to redeem shares? Was there any kind of plan for redemption?
Mr. Burke testified that the shares were essentially like membership certificates and would be turned back into the corporation. There was no money to be made by a shareholder.
I want to talk just a little bit more about that. What if they turned their stock back? What would they get in return?
There was no value to it. It was like a membership certificate. You know, a mention was made of the Green Bay Packers organization. We have stock certificates that folks have. That's essentially what we have here. And that also goes to the argument about, well, they have a Chapter 180 corporation. They could always amend their bylaws and make these distributions to members.
Is there any way that a member could make money by dint of stock ownership in this organization?
No.
What if the corporation dissolved? Who gets it?
I believe I don't think there's a provision. If that provision would be governed under Chapter 180, since they're organized under 180, but it would be subject to the provisions of the articles, which would be...
What does the article say?
The articles say that it cannot be for the pecuniary gain of any membership. So,
where does it say that?
There's actually a number of private profits. There's actually a number of provisions which speak to the fact that Halter is not organized for profit.
Right.
It says this corporation will be a non-profit corporation, which is to be formed not for private profit.
There's an Article 4, corporation is not formed for profit, nor shall it inure to officers or directors. It doesn't say it's not to inure to the members.
If you continue in Article 4, mm-hmm. it also speaks to that this corporation shall not carry on any other activities, nor be, or not permitted to be carried on by, and then it references the federal income tax provision, section 501(c)(7). And if you take a look at the income tax provision, it requires for exemption under 7, clubs organized for pleasure, recreation, or other non-profitable purposes, substantially all of the activities of which are for such purposes, and no part of the net earnings of which inures to the benefit of any private shareholder.
Doesn't say dissolution. Net earnings is not on dissolution.
Well, that
with earnings on dissolution would be the value of the company.
There's no provision with respect to dissolution that I can see in these articles.
Well, Chapter 180 has a provision which would go back to the members.
Right, and it would be, the problem is that for a very, very long time, organizations or corporations organized as for-profit, as stock corporations, both for-profit and not-for-profit. Both were included in Chapter 180. And that's part of the argument that we've raised here is, were they legally organized? Could you have a stock nonprofit after 1953? Now, the provision relied upon is section was 180.97. And I believe that it's been misinterpreted by the appellants. That provision was to preserve existing corporations, but it also provided, in much broader language, that, I'll pull it out in front of me,
we're talking about the 1983-84 statutes now?
Correct. It, chapter 180, it's 180.97, and this is the provision that was relied upon in substantially similar form in that Attorney General's opinion, which appellants have relied upon to say, after 1953, no such thing. Mm-hmm. That's not what this statute provides. There was a change in the corporate law, but they wanted to preserve existing corporations, but they did make provisions for other types of organizations. What's governing is that very broad language of sub 1, which says after June 30th, 1953, this chapter shall apply to all domestic corporations with capital stock, regardless of when they were organized and whether for profit or not. To interpret this statute to say after 1953 you can't have a stock nonprofit corporation would render that language meaningless.
My general understanding, and it's general understanding of nonprofits, is that if you're talking about a corporation, by definition, it's non-stock now. I mean, are you able to assist me with any treatise or forms put out by the state bar, or any manuals put out by the state bar that would suggest that after 1953, that a nonprofit can be under 180. Can you point me to anything?
I can't point you to anything that says one way or the other. What I can point you to is 180.97, which says this law will apply to them regardless whether for profit or not, regardless when they're organized or not. And there's no provision that says after 1953 you can't have.
I mean, the Attorney General, that's persuasive authority, obviously not binding, but 1958 issued an opinion regarding this very statute, the words of this very statute, and addressed point blank the question that is now before us in this context and answered, no, you can't. I mean, answered against you. You can't have a nonprofit under 180 if it was formed after 1953. You can't have it. Can you point me to anything that says you can?
Well, number one, I don't believe that's what the Attorney General opinion holds. It says that the Secretary of State has the authority, if they choose, not to accept articles that are devised under that statute. But number two, what we do have here, and as I've noted in
the number two, let me just read, and I'm reading from Appendix 227, the Attorney General opinion. The question starts out in 224. You have inquired whether a nonprofit stock corporation may be lawfully organized under Chapter 180 with stats. It's at 224. The answer is on 227, petitioner's appendix. It is my opinion that a nonprofit stock corporation cannot be lawfully organized under Chapter 150, subsequent to July 1, 1953, and subject to the appeal provision stated in 180.19 sub 1, you would be justified in finding that the proposed articles do not conform to law. That's the answer.
And that's the saying provision I, the answer? That's a provision I rely on, saying this, it's within the authority of the Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State in this case did find and accept and has, as we see from the letter from the Department of Financial Institutions, recognized Halter as a stock nonprofit since its inception in 1984. Once that is established, it's conclusive, except with regard to a challenge by the state. And that's the Litton Systems case, and there's the statute particularly on that point, saying it's unassailable from a de jure standpoint. This is a corporation recognized by the state in this manner. We're done. Now,
the appeal procedures referred to were in 180.92. Is that what you're indicating took place here?
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
Reading from where the appeal procedures of the Secretary of State of 180.92 in the Attorney General's opinion, are you saying that's what went on here?
I'm sorry, is that what went on here? I'm not following.
I'm not making myself clear. The Attorney General opinion states in its conclusion, it's my opinion that a nonprofit stock corporation cannot be lawfully organized under Chapter 180 after, subsequent to, July 1, 1953. So that answers against you. I thought you were using the rest of that sentence in support of your position.
I'm not arguing that it's because of the appeal process. My argument is that this is an advisory opinion saying you would be justified in finding the proposed articles do not conform to law. But in fact, in this case, the Secretary of State did find that they conformed to law when they were accepted for filing. Actually, the Attorney General opinion does discuss the authority of the Secretary of State and indicates that the Secretary of State has to make a determination as to whether or not this corporation is legally formed. It has been when those articles are accepted for filing, and that's why the statute says once they're accepted for filing, it's unassailable. It's the state can challenge it, but other parties cannot. Halter Wildlife is a non-profit organized under Chapter 180, and that's established as a matter of law. Even if for some reason you could say they didn't comply with Chapter 180, they should have been under Chapter 181, well, then here we have an organization that has, since its inception, said, we are organized for not-for-profit, we are operating not-for-profit, we have tax-exempt status from the federal government as this tax-exempt organization. But now after the fact, the court's going to look through and say, well, we don't think you technically complied with this corporation statute, and therefore you're not entitled to the immunity that's afforded to nonprofit organizations. I think we kind of lose sight of the definition of 895.52. It doesn't require that type of technical accuracy.
I have a question for you. Can you have a not-for-profit organization under 895 that would be taxable under the IRS?
I think I'm not positive about this, but I believe there are some type of structures that way, but I'm not positive. So I really don't want to speak to that without knowing that for certain. I do know that in this case, as has been said over and over, Halter Wildlife was enacted for the purpose of being a nonprofit. It's operated as being a nonprofit. It doesn't distribute to its membership. It's recognized by the state. It's recognized by the IRS as being a nonprofit organization. And for that reason, I think that immunity should apply.
The incident occurred July 13, 2002. If someone had been interested in purchasing or acquiring stock in this organization a few days prior to that, what is the procedure that they would have followed to do that?
There's nothing in the record that I can speak to as to how new memberships are entertained or it simply was not an issue, and there's nothing in the record I can cite to for that. I see my time's up. If there's no other questions, I'll take a seat. Thank you.
Counsel, Mr. Covello?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to start with the definition of a nonprofit organization under the Recreational Immunity Statute, which is the same definition that was dealt with in the St. John's case, conducted for pecuniary profit. In the St. John's case, what the court held was that the stockholders in that case, their stock was enhanced by the fact that the corporation received excess revenues in place of their expenses for that calendar year. And by virtue of the fact that it did, the stock was enhanced, and the corporation was conducted for pecuniary profit because the shareholders basically realized a profit. If the corporation...
Your opposing counsel has noted, or she noted early in her presentation in response to one of my questions, that the membership dues during the relevant time periods had not gone down, they had not declined. Do you agree with that, or is there something in the record to indicate they had in fact gone down?
I do disagree with that. Attorney Dunphy, during Mr. Burke's deposition, asked Mr. Burke, the general manager of Paul for Wildlife, how do you keep dues around the same range year after year for what you charge corporations and members that come onto your land to hunt? And what Mr. Burke said is that we raise the cost of all the other activities, like these picnics that we hold during the summertime.
So the dues had stayed around the same amount, but had they decreased?
They haven't decreased, but they have stayed around the same amount over the years, and that was the testimony of the general manager of Halter Wildlife. Now, with regard to the St. John's decision, I think it was supported also by a case that we cite from the state of Ohio, which is Shaker Heights, and I think this gets to the Chief Justice's question with regard to what happens at dissolution. Bear in mind that Halter profited in 2002, they made $107,000. Shaker Heights involved a corporation that said, hey, we're a nonprofit, even though we're organized with stock. And what the court said in that case is the accumulation of surplus increased equity in the stock. As a measure of the shareholders' equity, the surplus reflected in dollar amounts what the shareholders could realize in the event of liquidation.
Well, that goes to a point, I'm sorry, Justice That goes to a point that your opposing counsel also mentioned. In response to one of my questions, in that if a member of this organization, a stockholder, for whatever reason, people experience financial difficulties from time to time, deaths occur certainly, needed to surrender or try to redeem shares of this stock, there simply is, according to opposing counsel, nothing in the record to indicate that they would receive any money.
I don't believe there's anything in the record that would indicate that they wouldn't receive any money either. I think the corporate documents are silent as to that. What I do know is that if this corporation dissolved tomorrow, they could distribute all their significant assets to the 200 shareholders that are also exclusive members of this corporation. There is nothing to prevent them from doing that. That is why they're organized for pecuniary profit under the case law, is because they have the ability to take whatever money they've made in 2002 was $107,000 and give it to their shareholders.
Right, but unlike the hypothetical or the case law that you had cited, where the stock value increases, the only way they could realize any money, according to the record, is if the organization itself dissolved.
And 80% of the shareholders could force dissolution of the corporation under the Articles of Incorporation because they have voting rights. So, if my math is correct, I believe that's 160 of these shareholders could get together, and they all know each other, exclusive members of the club, and say, let's force this corporation to dissolve and realize the equities that we've made over the last 24 years. There's nothing in the law that would prevent them from doing that. That is why they're organized for pecuniary profit. And remember, it's an either-or situation. No matter what they've done, the fact that they haven't distributed any monies to the members up to this point in time, that may go to whether or not they conducted themselves.
You are taking the position that a for-profit corporation is one whose realization of gain depends on its dissolution?
That's one of the reasons, yes. And the fact that if you're formulated with stock, yes. And I think we've cited sufficient case law in our brief to support the fact that when you're looking at whether or not you're organized for pecuniary profit, you're looking for any potential for the members or shareholders of profit. And in this situation, there is nothing to prevent these shareholders from receiving significant equities from this corporation at the time of dissolution. That's why they're organized for pecuniary profit, regardless of whether or not they've actually distributed up to this point in time. That's the second part of the definition, whether or not they were conducted for pecuniary profit. And very briefly, with regard to the certificate of incorporation, I think that the actual, if I may make this one point.
Yes, you may, counsel.
I think the actual statute 180.47, which is back in 1983-84, needs to be looked at. There are procedural requirements for starting a corporation. You have to file duplicate originals. Once you do all that, what the Secretary of State does is they give you a certificate of incorporation. It's like your birth certificate as a corporation. It says you're alive now. But if you look at the 180.47, all the certificate of incorporation did in this case when it was authorized by the Secretary of State is said, you're organized under Chapter 180. The three words under the statute is you're organized under this chapter, meaning that once we hand you your certificate of incorporation, you are now incorporated under Chapter 180, meaning you are a for-profit stock corporation as recognized by the Wisconsin legislature. So the certificate of incorporation actually supports our argument that this is a Chapter 180 for-profit corporation with stock that has the ability to make distributions to its shareholders. As a result, it's not organized for, it is organized for pecuniary profit and is not entitled to the definition under the recreational immunity statute of a nonprofit organization. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, both attorneys, Mr. Covello and Ms. Gunderson, for their arguments in yet another recreational immunity case, but perhaps with a different bent. That ends our hearing. I do want to say, Attorney Bill Cannon. Pardon me? Would you give that word? All right. That's because the firm name is always stated in that. But would you tell Attorney Cannon and give the respects of the court on the passing of his father, former Judge Bob Cannon? Thank you. Thank you, counsel. The student should remain, and Justice Prosser will be out to discuss the case with him.